I arrive here this morning full of gratitude. That look is the microphone working? The microphone gremlins have been visiting, it sounds like. They were here last week, and they were here this morning. So hopefully we'll keep them at bay for the next hour. So I'm grateful for our single-person sound tech committee. And I drove through fog and sunlight this morning, and I was grateful for that beauty. And I arrive here grateful for you, for the kindness that you have offered me in the past 10 days or so, as my father was very ill and I needed to be with my family. I guess it was Thursday of last week that I called and asked for some help with the Sunday service for last week. And every single person that I talked to said that they would be glad to help and suggested that I breathe. Every single person. It was like they were trying to tell me something. So I did breathe, and I helped my dad. And Jennifer and Barbara led a very thoughtful service. And my dad is better, and I am grateful for all of that. And that is always a place to start the day, start the hour, start the breath, gratitude. I heard an interview with a man whose whole house burned in the Northern California fires. And he was so grateful in that interview that the walnut tree in his front yard might have survived. And he was grateful for a few pieces of things that he got out of the ashes of his house. And I think most of all, he was grateful that his family was okay. He was grateful that they had rescued someone else's pet after the fire. The interviewer, and it sounds like some of you heard this moment, was a little taken aback by how much this person was just brimming with gratitude after this horrible traumatic event. He had just lost everything of material value that he owned, except for the clothes on his back. And he was sad and overwhelmed. But that most extreme moment, the meaning of his life was gratitude. He was still alive. He still had connections in the world. He was able to find meaning amid the ruins because he found the things he was grateful for. And on that foundation, he faced terrible days and will face exhausting rebuilding. I'm grateful that we can be here. I'm grateful that we can rest for a moment. I am grateful for your creativity and kindness and skill. I am grateful for all of the ways that this congregation meets the difficult world and all of the ways that you love the difficult world. Doc Nickerson will light our chalice this morning, and I invite you to say the words of our covenant, which are printed in the order of service. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humanity in fellowship, to respect the nurturing power within all of us. Thus do we covenant. Please join in singing hymn 1053 in the turquoise book, How Could Anyone? We will sing some of the most important members of our community and their leaders out to Young Church with the song that is printed in your order of service. Simple gifts.
Thank you.
The reading this morning will be a weaving of my words and your words and song. So I will describe the words part, and then Mary will help us with the music part, and then we'll weave it together. So the words for this reading are a almost entirely random smattering of memories from the past 16 years. I started to write things down, and it was several pages long, and so I've just picked some things at random, along with a couple of things that you all have said to me in the past few days. And I'm just going to read them. And what I'm hoping is that this scattering of memories will call up your own. There's nowhere near everything is here, because it can't possibly be, because there are 16 years of it. So fill in with your own minds what's not here. Names and sounds and important changes and important steadiness. And if you have been here for your whole life, you will have lots of other memories that will come along. And if you have only been here for a few weeks, I hope this gives you a little taste of what this community is like. I'm going to read three sections of these little memories, and then at the end, I'm going to invite you to speak some of the things that have come into your mind. And we'll do this the way we do our gathering of the names of water, which is we'll just all speak at once from where we're sitting. It's how memory works too, isn't it? It just sometimes all comes up at once, and sometimes you'll hear a few things at a time. Things will overlap. You'll hear things closer to you and maybe not as much far away, but we'll just let it all be part of the collective that this place is. And the reading will happen in four parts. So I'll read first a list of names, and then we'll sing a song, just one line of music. Some of you have gotten a preview of that line of music because some of you have some music tucked into your order of service. It turns out that that music is more information than you need in order to sing this song. Mary is going to just have us sing the sweetest, simplest melody line. So if you're a musician, you have all the music there, and you can study that and soak it up and take it home and keep singing it.
And join the choir.
And join the choir. Shameless plug for lots of singing. And if you can just put that music down if you have it, and if you don't have it, you don't need to worry about it, because Mary is just about to teach it to us. And you'll know it's time to sing it when I say the words to the song. I'll just read them without singing, and then it will be time to sing that line two times through. And Mary will lead us. And Mary will lead us in practicing right now.
Here's how it goes.
Those of you who have the music can see that this is written by Unitarian Universalist musician Jason Shelton, and he wrote this fairly recently in response to, I can't remember which event in the past. Was it Charlottesville? And several choirs have done it, and he has just been singing it as a meditation practice, just a keep opening up to the world. And so that's how we're going to use it today, as a practice of keeping ourselves open, difficult as it is. So join me in this remembering. Jim Blair, Karen Wolf, Michael Plummer, Grace Treadwell, Bo Stasek, George Gallo, Anne Friend, Gail Williamson, Arthur Tufts, Mary Copathorn. And in the past year, Betty, Dixon, Giselle, Barbara, Alex, Vicky, and JB. Love, once again, break our hearts open wide. Ophelia Bumps, Talent Shows, Solstice Fire in the Side Yard, Meditation Group, Beyond Coffee Hour Group, Leap of Faith, Claire Houston's Training for Meeting Guidelines, Beach Cleanup, Strategic Planning, Choir Service on Robert Frost, Seacoast Family Promise, Women and Girls Ceremony, Men's Potlucks, Harmonica Music from the Back, Grit and Grace Story Evening, Faces in Candlelight on Christmas Eve, Dancing Around the Church, Town Hall Gathering with Muslims after 9/11, Kickball in the Yard, Buses to Washington, D.C. to protest war. Thank you notes in church. One service, two services, one service. Occupy Wall Street. Love, once again, break our hearts open wide. Sound of metal chairs on the floor in the parish hall. The sound and vibration of the organ being played. The smell of coffee brewing in the big pots. The grit of salt and sand on the front steps. Birds in the trees in the meditation garden. Children's laughter coming in the window. A drum beat. That sound. Your singing voices. Love, once again, break our hearts open wide. I invite you to speak right where you are. Any words, any names that are in your remembering. And all of our memories will overlap and be one.
Summer services.
Abigail Phillips.
Mary playing Mr. Rogers' Neighbor by Blanky Guy. Confidence.
Apple slices dipped in honey.
My wedding, 2007.
Antlers in the aisles.
The universe story.
Church kickball. Painting eyes.
Retreat weekends.
Our service after 9/11.
Oh, banjo.
Ike's bursting.
Elm dance.
New nursery rhyme.
Kia's child dedication.
Heating this room with our body heat when the furnace went out.
Oliver coming to choir rehearsal.
Voices in unison.
Becoming a green sanctuary.
Becoming welcoming.
Ronan's burn.
Pod cleaners.
Even holes for animals.
Yard work.
Love, once again, break our hearts open wide.
Love, once again, break our hearts open wide. Love,
have already heard. Nope.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
If I talk like this? No? Can you? Okay. I'm going to invite you to come forward for Joy and Sorrows, but the microphone is not cooperating with us. So I'll invite you to come and stand next to me, and then I'm going to translate if necessary for those folks who usually rely on some amplification. We've heard some joy and some sorrow this morning already. We have a sense of the breadth of it and the depth of it. So we take this moment to honor the particular things that are happening in your lives right now. And we know that, just has already been true this morning, there is so much more than can ever be put into words. So if you have a joy or a sorrow, a transformation in your life, come stand with me. We'll listen, and then I'll say it again for people who need a little extra volume for hearing well.
Supportive of the extra soundtrack that I've been bringing with me the last couple weeks. I wanted to share joy. My son Jack, who's in treatment for leukemia down in Boston, has started growing back his hair, which is, I know, like a very, I don't know, cosmetic sort of thing. There are bigger things to worry about, but it's a sign that things are going well. And 2 days ago, he woke up and he had enough hair for a bedhead, which was like, bedhead.
Her son Jack, who has been getting chemotherapy, is growing his hair back. And he had enough hair for it to be bedhead in the morning. Great joy.
I'm Roy. My sorrow this week has been that I heard from my daughter Remy that she's dealing with sexual harassment at work.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My joy is that our son got married last week down in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. He's my baby, he's 28. And of course it was joyful. Both Brad's and my side of the family were all there, which is a big deal because they're from all over the world and it doesn't happen very often. And so Kendra did a wonderful service in the midst of her father's illness, which was, we were very grateful for. On the way home, my husband's sister was driving Paul and Eddie because our car was full. And she was driving on 125 and she fell asleep. And she woke up just as she was veering into the oncoming traffic and swerved to the side, and it was okay. So as easy as it is to be grateful for a wedding and dancing and food and music and family, actually what I'm really grateful for is that the worst thing that could have happened did not.
This coming Saturday, my second cousin, my cousin's daughter, is getting married, and we're looking forward to that.
Good morning, Kendra. My name is Maggie. And I have two joys. My first joy is Mary. And my second joy is I just came back from spending a week with my sister in Connecticut. She lost her husband to a glioblastoma a year ago, April. And she is left in a huge house all by herself. And I was able to give her joy for her birthday. It wasn't an easy week because she's very weakly still. But the best joy came out of that is that she's an Outlander fan. Anybody who watches Outlander, we're going to Scotland next year, and we made our plane reservation, so I'm hoping we don't wear ourselves out between now and next July, but we rewatched the season, two and a half seasons, over a 5-day period.
There are two ways to translate that one. Maggie recently watched a lot of TV. For a very good cause, which is being with her sister, who recently lost her husband, and they have plans to travel to Scotland together.
Hi, I'm Laura. My joy involves a dog, or two dogs, rather. We have always had golden retrievers when we raised our family, and our last one we had euthanized several years ago. He was a gift from a breeder. He was green-legged and blind to one eye, and we only saw the perfection in him because we loved him. So I've been waiting and waiting for the right dog to come again, because I want to do some therapeutic work. And I recently purchased an adult male golden retriever and went to pick him up and realized when I went to get him, he had been with a family for 5 years and their child had developed allergies. But that's all I knew. And when I went to get him, I looked at him and realized he was scared to death. And he probably wouldn't be what I needed in a dog if I were to pursue this avenue. But I couldn't leave him there. And I took him home. And I had to keep reminding myself that perfection is in the eyes of us. And I realized after 3 weeks that I'd fallen in love with him. He is really perfect in all his imperfections. So I have a great golden. He won't be a therapy dog, but I think he's going to do great things just being my partner. And my husband's partner, who's really fun to do.
Laura has found a new golden retriever in her life.
Good morning. I have a sorrow. My grandson, who is 17 years old, woke up with double vision. And the doctors can't figure it out. And so he's been through multiple testing and no brain tumor. No myasthenia gravis and no Guillain-Barré. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that it's one of these freakish viral infections and that it'll just eventually clear up. So keep them in your thoughts, please. His name is Teddy Keith. Thank you.
Adrian's grandson has unexplained double vision. So we're hoping that it will just resolve. Kristen O'Gorman left us a sorrow. Her cousins live in Santa Rosa and are fine. Santa Rosa UU is a very large congregation. 15 families from their congregation have lost homes to the fire. It's always just one or two steps away in the web, the joy and the sorrow. We honor what we have heard this morning, and we honor what is not spoken aloud, but is part of this web that always holds us.
I invite you into a time of meditation or your own practice of being still. The world needs you to be still. The world tugs and pushes and prods and rages and wails, And it needs for you to be steady in all that. And so in these moments of quiet, may we rely on each other in this space to be able to contemplate the hardest things, the things we mostly try not to think about. I invite you to a practice, a version of Tonglen, in which as you breathe in your longing for suffering to end. Whether it's one particular suffering in the world or in yourself, or the whole array that can be very hard to take in. But as you breathe in your longing for that suffering to end. And as you breathe out what will end the suffering, kindness, water, food, winter. May this time of honoring our own sorrow and honoring the ending of suffering, may this deepen our compassion. After the lovely celebration that you held, we got to have a couple of weeks ago in honor of me having been here for 16 years, I thought about thinking about and then talking a little bit about what I think I've learned in 16 years. And I started out making one of those lists, and I was relieved to discover that it was a fairly long list of varying sizes, these things I've learned. Like, I write better with a pencil and a notebook than I do with a computer. I have learned that not just this congregation, but most of Northern New England underestimates our significance in the world. I have learned that drinking coffee makes me anxious. I have learned to say, I don't know. When I had less experience, I was more afraid to say it. And now that I've learned more, I am much more willing to say, I don't know. I have learned that it is easier to change your ideas than your behavior. I should say that differently. It is easier to change my ideas than my behavior. One of my early mentors told me when I went into ministry that I would have to wear a watch. This was sort of a, there are sacrifices you will have to make, Kendra, moment. And I have mostly learned to wear one, although the battery is not working at the moment. She would be sort of shaking her head knowingly at that information. And another mentor told me that ministers usually have just one sermon. And they pretty much preach that one sermon over and over and over again. Hopefully with some variation. But they pretty much, at the core, there's just one message. And it's what you would say is that minister's gospel. The good news that they have found to give the world. And I have noticed over the years that I have had three sermons. In 16 years, I have come up with a total of three. And I got to thinking about what it is that I think caused the changes moving from one sermon to another. So let me tell you what I think those sermons have been. Hopefully they'll sound familiar to you. One sermon, and I think I still preach this one from time to time, but I think I preached it more at the beginning. This living is so hard. How can we be anything but loving? This was, I found this phrase on a t-shirt in San Francisco. I lived right near the Castro, which was the largely gay male neighborhood, and they had just been so terribly affected by the AIDS crisis. Everyone had lost someone important to them, if not many important people to them. And there was an intensity of grief and an intensity of treasuring life just on the streets that was astonishing. And so that t-shirt was in response to the AIDS crisis. And I thought, well, it's a way to respond to the difficulty of the world for sure, and it's also an ethical claim. It's a claim about how we're going to live with each other. So that's a pretty good gospel in the world. And I think it's also an essentially universalist gospel. The universalists thought that God was a loving God, and that when they read the Bible, they saw love there. And when they looked out in the world, they saw, well, what we see now. A bruised and hurting world, troubled people, and that what their work was to bring love to the world. And they wrestled with the same thing that I think we wrestle with now, which is, so we know that love is the key to it all, but what do we do about people who don't act like that? Which is, it turns out, a good part of humanity. In fact, sometimes it's us on a given day. And how do you have a response to that? The universalists have a whole array of answers, and maybe we'll have a history session sometime about all of the answers they came up with. But I finally just decided that gospel that I had been working on, framed just like that, didn't really grapple with, well, the fact that sometimes people respond to how hard it is to live by being violent and hateful. That's one of the responses that people have. So I think I started wandering and trying to figure out how do you put together that kind of love in the world with the fact that people sometimes respond to difficulty by making things worse. So for a while, I think I preached the sermon, well, for quite a while, Live Your Life. Mary's chuckling because frequently after a Sunday, she would say to me, live your life. And I liked it because it could be live your life or live your life or live your life. So there were ways to engage your particular life, your own situation, understanding who you are in your context, which is pretty important if you're going to meet the world, to know who you really are and how your perspective affects how you meet the world. Your family history and your emotional life. And I still preach that one. It's Brené Brown. I was waiting for her to arrive because she had the research to back up some of this. And both of these gospels are profoundly humanist, meaning that they're focused on the human endeavor, on choices and powers and how we humans are responsible for what happens next around us. That there won't be an intervention of some kind, that it's in our hands. And then a year or two ago, I noticed that I wasn't preaching that sermon all the time, that it had changed. So I had to listen to my sermons for a little while to figure out what I was preaching now. And now I think the sermon that I preach to you every week is Everything is Connected. At my home, we have jokes about what our superpowers are. My husband can make a pun about anything that gets said. That is his superpower. And my superpower is that I can find a connection between almost any two things. It might take me a minute, but I can find a way to get them connected. So, of course, I have grown into a gospel of everything is connected, because I think it is. And I think that as I have studied Joanna Macy and some other writers about our connection to the natural world and have gotten out into the natural world now, it has affirmed my earliest childhood experiences that in our world, everything is connected. A few years ago, I preached a sermon about some trees growing out in the woods here, and learning that their roots were all a network, and that when you cut down a tree in this network and leave a stump, the stump is still alive, even though there are no leaves of any kind. And you can tell the stump is alive because the bark continues to grow up over the stump to protect it. And its roots are still in the network underground. And I, like many people, used to walk by that stump thinking, oh, a stump. It's just a little bit of wood that's left over. But it's still connected. And that is one of the moments when I think I truly understood that there are connections underground everywhere all the time, whether the ground is our own lives or the dirt in the forest. And so I began to actually believe in some of the mysterious and inexplicable experiences that one has as a minister when you walk with people through all kinds of extreme experiences in life. Things that you don't understand what's happening, but you can see that something is pulling on people, that there's something underground that's moving, that's really there, even though you can't see it or touch it. So I have returned to a more mystical claim, more confidence that there is something moving in the universe that we can't understand, but it's there. And it's also an ethical claim that every action we take is connected to every other action. It may not be direct causation. In fact, it very rarely is. That there's not often a direct reciprocity, like in the do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But still, what we do is connected to everything else. So this has shifted how I lead. I think I am more able to be in a situation, whether it's a meeting here or out in the world, and just notice what is happening. Instead of trying to fix what's happening, just see what's happening. And ask questions like, why is this happening now? Which is a question about what is it connected to? What happened before it? What's happening underground that I don't know about? And it means being able to ask questions about what's happening instead of coming to conclusions quickly, which our culture really encourages us to do, to assess a situation, come to a conclusion, and move on. And it's interesting to lead by finding the connections that are waiting in a moment. And instead of telling a story about what I think is happening, I have a very good imagination. I'm extremely skilled at doing that. Turns out it's completely unhelpful, and that it's much better to just see if you can watch what's happening. And I think I've learned to do that more. You can tell me if I'm wrong about that. Here's a little moment I had recently with this. I was driving down the highway, and a car came right up behind me and was riding very close to my bumper, pretty aggressive. And I've had a variety of responses to that in the past. Of course, I get angry about it. Sometimes I just touch the brake enough so that it looks like I'm braking, but I'm not braking, just to see if maybe that will inspire them to slow down. Usually just annoys them further. So, and I'm usually telling a story to myself about how they're an aggressive driver and they need to learn to manage themselves, they need to be more respectful, and you know. Well, this time I waved to the person who was behind me. I'm not sure why. And they waved back. They did. And they slowed down. And then we got a little further up and I changed lanes. And they passed me and they waved at me. They waved at me like you wave at someone who's let you in to a long line of cars, or someone who's sort of done you a little courtesy. It was sort of the, hey, thanks, wave. And I thought, oh, I think they'd forgotten that I was there, even though I was right in front of them, and that they remembered that I was there and that we were in this driving thing together. Now, that's just a moment. It's not a whole process of remembering connection, but it is about remembering to act as if I'm connected to everyone all the time, even when they're being aggressive and not respectful, when they're forgetting who I am. I don't have to forget. I can remember, and I can remind them kindly. I can call that connection back in every moment. Just have to keep seeing what's moving underground, knowing that it's there. I noticed that it was challenging to think about what I've learned and then tell you what I've learned, because mostly I thought, I should know that already. I should have had this all worked out before I... can you see the head shaking up front here and in the back? So that was an interesting thing to learn as well. So one of the things that I think I am also learning in this ministry of mine is how to be a private, introspective person in public, which is, I think, a challenge for all people, but it's more of a challenge if you're, say, standing up in public and talking frequently. And I realized in this past week when I called people up and they had to remind me to breathe that I have been learning this with you, but maybe haven't been willing to fully engage the risk of it, to fully grow into what that means. So that's the thing I'm learning now. And I am grateful for the most immediate kindness that you have offered me. And I'm grateful for the way that that encourages me to grow into the next phase of my ministry, the next phase of me living out loud, me living into all of the connections that I know are there, but that I sometimes forget about when I'm worried about what I'm supposed to have already known. So I look forward to more learning in front of you, which will be a little messier and uneven on my part. And then I think, well, how lucky am I that at this point in my life, when I might be sort of expecting everything to be steady, I get to reinvent again, and that I get to do it with you. Thank you. One of the practices that we have that builds our connectedness in the world is our give it away offering. And once a month, we give away our money so that we can find those connections. We can see that we are part of what is happening all around us and that it helps us not keep our distance from the world. And Gail Nostrom is ready now to come forward and talk to you about CROP.
I almost misplaced this.
Good morning. It's our October to give it away for the CROP walk. This part is the CROP, or the harvest, which is our give it away, and the walk is a little later this afternoon in Swayze Parkway. So we hope that you'll join us. Normally, Rich and Sally Coleman are really the spearhead for this. They've taken it on for a number of years, and they would not show up without their t-shirt, so I was frantically trying to find the t-shirt, and here it is. We have a video, though, that they graciously, with Herb's wonderful help, were able to make as part of the Give It Away talk this morning. But just to lead into that, I just was curious, for the years that we've been active in this, I've participated, but haven't really thought too much. And this morning I'm thinking, CROP. What does CROP stand for? And so I looked that up, and the acronym CROP began in 1947 under the wing of Church World Services. And it was an acronym for the Christian Rural Overseas Program. Its primary mission was to help Midwest farm families to share their grain with hungry neighbors in the post-World War II Europe and Asia. So I thought that was kind of interesting. This is one of the few give-it-aways that we kind of go beyond our local community. But we've done it for so long that we've, you know, find that we just continue to do it, and it's an important mission. It you know, services the bigger world, but it also goes to some local food pantries. They've outgrown that particular acronym, they said, as far as its mission, but they retain crop for its historic purposes. And so anyhow, we will have a lovely little video from Sally and Rich with Herb's Help. I'll take it from the top. Thank you so much, everybody. Hope to see you at Swayze Parkway.
Good morning, friends.
Good morning.
Today is Crop Walk Sunday, and we are sorry we're not able to walk with you. We're out and walking in Yosemite National Park, but we'll be thinking of you. We want to remind you that Crop has been part of this community for 35 years, and so Fuse has been part of the Crop Walk for 35 years, doing a lot of walking. Today, I hope that you'll think about the Give It Away Sunday and be able to donate some, or if you want to do the online option, that would be wonderful also.
Unfortunately, poverty and hunger are still part of the global and the local community, and that's why Crop continues to exist and why people support it so actively. Thank you for being involved with Crop here today. Thank you for the help that you provide to the five local food pantries through the money raised by Crop. It's appreciated, and it does make a difference.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
Have a great day.
There are candles available up front if you wish to light one for a memory or a hope. The morning offering for Crop Walk will now be received. I bring the light of this chalice forward so that you can take this light with you and find all of those hidden connections that wait for us. Please join in the unison benediction. The words are printed on your heart or in the order of service. Go in peace.
Speak truth. Give thanks each day. Respect the earth and all creatures, for they are alive like you. Care for your body, it is a wondrous gift. Be gentle with yourself. Live simply. Be of service. Be guided by your faith and not your fear. Go lightly on your way. Go off in a sacred manner.
Let's have a youth band.